The Ireland-Portugal Business Network is comprised of more than 200 member companies based in Portugal and Ireland. These companies are from a wide range of industries and professions and represent in excess of 25,000 people.
Well, thank you everyone for joining. I really appreciate that you've decided to join Brendan and I today. So just to begin, Brendan had a fabulous idea to do a little pop quiz because throughout this kind of presentation, I am going to be using quite a lot of Gen Z lingo. And so we thought it might be a fun idea to, I guess, test you out on what you know already in terms of, Gen Z lingo. So I will ask a series of questions. And if you can just put in the chat what your answer would be, whether it's A, B or C. And we'll just have a bit of fun with that. So the first question is, if someone is spilling the tea, what are they doing? A, drinking tea, B, gossiping, or C, cooking? We've got a B for gossiping. We've got lots of Bs, gossiping. Yeah, that is correct. The next question is, what does sus mean? A, suspicious, B, superstar, or C, speedy? Yeah, you guys know all of the lingo. Okay, no cap means A, no hats allowed, B, lying, or C, telling the truth. Got some different answers coming in now. Yeah, so the answer for that one is lying. B, lying. And then the last one is, if something is lit, is it A, sunny, B, exciting, or C, strange? So the answer to that is B, it is exciting. So that is a word that I will be coming back to later. So, but I think a lot of it comes from like TikTok and social media in general and like influencers, and then all of a sudden like a word's gone viral and everyone's using it. Okay, so I wanted to start today with basically getting everything on the table. As Arnold said, like for me, this is really not going to be just me saying like, this is what I think and this is how it is. I would love it to be like a two-way discussion as much as possible, and to get your input as well in terms of, for example, when I say Gen Z in the workplace, what actually comes to mind? If we, you know, are super honest with ourselves, I would love for you to put in the chat any words from your own experience, or maybe what you've seen in the media, any headlines, some of the existing narrative around Gen Z. And don't worry if it's not the nicest word. I've heard it all. Thank you, Brendan. Entitled, that's one I hear all the time. Disruptive. I guess, Mary, earlier you were talking a lot about work-life balance.
Yeah, I don't understand all the negativity, actually, because, you know, this is like the future generation and we have to stop comparing them to us, whether they're my generation or a younger one than that or et cetera. And we have to see the potential that they have because they have so much potential. Disruptive is, well, it's not a word I'd actually use about anyone. And I certainly wouldn't use it about Gen Z because what we consider to be disruption, well, okay, we're old. That's if we're talking about disruption. They are doing what we've all done kind of before, not perhaps a little bit more intensely, but I don't see that they're disruptive or there's too much negativity about them and I don't like it. Sorry, lad.
No, thank you, Mary. So it's a great point and actually leads me on very well to my next slide, which is if you look in the media and you just, I just did a quick search of Gen Z in the workplace, and these are some actual headlines that come up in mainstream media. You know, keywords like the snowflake generation, they're so difficult to work with, they want it all, they're socially anxious, they're lazy, they lack soft skills. Some other phrases I hear, you know, they show no respect, they don't want to work hard. There's no grit. They can't do phone conversations. all of these comments. And I guess with everything, it depends on your perspective, right? And the angle that you take. So Mary, you raised such a good point. So here I want to, that's why I wanted to get everything out on the table, because there are a lot of kind of negative connotations with Gen Z. And I want to kind of delve into that and just look at how true is that, are those stereotypes? Are they actually serving us, you know, if we're employers of Gen Z, is it serving us to have that mindset? So I'd like to just do some really quick facts about Gen Z. So just in case you're not aware, so this generation were born between 1997 and 2012. So the age range currently is between 12 and 27. As you all probably know, we're the first fully digitally native generation. In some areas, the most ethnically diverse generation as well. And by 2030, actually, I think that's meant to be 2025. Yeah, I think it's actually next year. By next year, Gen Z will make up 27% of the global workforce, which is quite a lot. And I actually read a stat that in Ireland, every 4 out of 10 inhabitants in Ireland are under the age of 29. So Ireland has a particularly large proportion of the population that is in Gen Z and Alpha. Alpha is the one after Gen Z. So I just want to bring a bit of context around like the Gen Z upbringing. So if we think about all of these stereotypes, it's important to kind of put it into context. Like what was it like to grow up as a Gen Z? So I can give my own personal perspective growing up in the UK. I'm 25, and if I think about kind of the key aspects of more generally my upbringing, one of the first things I would say was, of course, the digital world. Like I think I was 12 when I got my first phone, and obviously I'm one of the eldest of the Gen Z generation, so now I know that kids are getting phones younger and younger. But I know we talk about like, oh, you know, they grew up with technology, they don't know anything different. But to really bring it to life, I just want to share a few stories of, I remember when Facebook first came out, and I got my first profile when I was 13. I think you had to be 16, but you know, as you do, you try out these things. And of course, there's no safeguards or kind of support and structure in place, because of course, our parents, you know, were completely new to this at the time as well. So very quickly at the age of 13, you know, when you've got a growing brain, you've just joined high school, you're kind of settling in, suddenly you have access to Facebook, to Instagram, to Snapchat. And what that meant for me personally is the way that I was kind of communicating with everyone instantaneously was really priming like my brain to always be on and to always feel like I could talk to anyone at any point and kind of have that expectation of that was normal. And the other thing is, we started to become like the speed of communication was so much quicker. So if something happened at school, by the end of the day, the whole of your school knew about it because it would go around on Snapchat or BBM broadcast, if anyone remembers BlackBerry. The BlackBerry days. And not only did a whole school know about it, but every single school in the region knew the gossip, the tea, the GCT. And I think this had such a big impact on like our growing brains, kind of priming us to start to use our voices quite early on. And I think this is an interesting point when we talk about Gen Z being entitled. And I think a big part of it is that we are used to using our voice so early on. And if you look at TikTok and the way that news is spread there, if something bad happens at a company, I don't know if anyone has heard about the TikTok of a lady who was working at Cloudflare, and she got let go in a really bad way, and she recorded herself, and then she posted it on TikTok, and it went viral in a matter of minutes almost. And the damage that has had, obviously, on the brand, to the extent that the CEO actually put out a Twitter. It's not called Twitter anymore, is it? I'm going to always call it Twitter, sorry. A tweet out, kind of having to defend the company. So I think it's just good context of being used to sharing views and sharing news to the world so quickly, and being super informed about what's going on. So if I think about what are the key kind of geopolitical, economic, cultural events that have happened in whilst I was growing up that I feel were really impacted me in terms of like what I was worried about, what I was learning about at school, I would say it was climate change and the 2008, 2009 financial crisis. And I think with these two points as well, if you partner them up with the fact that we have now access to social media, to these websites, and you can now access so much information about climate change and the recession and economics. I think, and I was talking to a colleague about this yesterday, he's saying, he was like, you just didn't know all of this stuff that was happening. And I think we've grown up, and like the next generation, learning about so much stuff that's happening in the world that oftentimes is horrible, and being really kind of worried about it and almost bombarded by so much negative news, kind of priming our brains. And I guess in one way that could have led to us being kind of called this generation of like social impact change makers, because I guess we are more informed. But then on the other side, perhaps making us more anxious. Well, that's a whole debate of whether anxiety has increased or whether it's just we're more able to talk about it now. That's a whole other debate. But it does raise an interesting point about how healthy is it for you to have so much access to all of this news all of the time growing up. So after that, after this childhood, I went to university. I went to King's College, if anyone knows it, in London. I studied international management. I absolutely loved it. I took every opportunity that came to me. I was living, working in Sydney, Toronto, New York. You know, the world was my oyster until March 2020. I don't know if anyone remembers that time, when it all came crashing down. And I was in my final year. I had just applied for a load of grad schemes, a load of jobs, and all of a sudden, all of the hard work that was put into that was taken away as all the jobs basically disappeared. And I was having to all of a sudden shift completely online to taking all of my exams and my final lectures online. And I'm actually very lucky and very privileged in the sense that I still had a roof over my head. I still, you know, I was at the end of my university degree. So I'd already had 3 years prior of amazing, like, in-person experiences, interactions with peers, with lecturers, etc. But the research is showing that the pandemic has had a really, really tough, hard impact on young people. I think Gartner said that 46% of Gen Z employees say the pandemic hindered their educational or career goals. And 51% say now that their education has not prepared them for the workforce at all. And I think this is so important because I speak to, heads of talent at organizations, and they say we've got people coming into the work into our company, and they've got the same degree, the same grade as all of the previous cohorts that have come in, but the skills are just not there. You know, the social, the more like softer, which are actually the harder skills. The communication, the presenting, the influencing skills, the leadership skills, all of those skills. But I think it's so important for us to kind of not overlook just how much the pandemic has impacted young people's development of these skills. And so now, unfortunately, because our education system has kind of let us down in that respect. Now the burden is kind of falling onto organizations to bridge this gap. So it'd be interesting to hear your guys' perspective on that, whether you have noticed that at all. So anyway, after coronavirus, I did manage to get a graduate job. It was 100% remote. So for the first year of my working life, as in post-grad working life, I didn't meet any of my colleagues, and until a year after, which obviously that's it's a bit odd when you join a company and then a year after you meet everyone in person, and it's like, oh, you're a lot shorter than I thought you were, or you're a lot taller than I thought you were. And kind of, yeah, I think you really miss out on those small, important kind of tapping you on the shoulder, like, oh, I don't really know how to do this. Would you be able to just help me out with this? You know, those kind of informal short conversations that you don't want to book a meeting for with someone, and make it really formal. So anyway, if you look at the research, if we look at the pandemic, the research is saying that because Gen Z grew up in the pandemic and witnessed rising social injustice and the global economic hardship of like the financial crisis. We've got the here in the UK, we've got the cost of living crisis. So it's led them to have like this strong sense of ethics and a deep need to make impact on important social issues. So again, it would be interesting to hear whether you see that as true in your own experience as well. So now I after graduating, I spent 3 years in regulatory technology, which is a subset of fintech. And now I am kind of building a portfolio career, working on projects and initiatives that have massive meaning for me, because that's what gets me personally super engaged, making a difference. And I will talk a little bit more about what I do at Holos a bit later, because this isn't about me in that respect. So when it comes to Gen Z at work, what are they actually looking for? How can we attract and engage them? So of course we've got all of the traditional things. I think it's important not to put these aside. Money, of course, having working somewhere where you feel cared for, where you feel appreciated, there's nothing new there. But what else? So the first thing is keeping things lit. So now we all know what that means. So keeping things exciting. So as I've kind of given a bit of context, like we're so used to having things at our fingertips, instant gratification, short attention span, always wanting newness and what's next. And with social media, everything kind of the grass is always greener, and you come home from work and you see on Instagram that your friend Aaron has just quit his job and he's now a full-time influencer or trader and he's a millionaire in 2 days. And you're like, oh wow, okay. That sounds interesting. So companies now aren't just competing against other companies. So for example, if you're in banking and you are offering a banking role, You're not just competing against other banks for your top Gen Z talent. You're competing against everyone who also wants to make money online, who wants to be an influencer. I think some research came out that being an influencer is actually one of the top jobs that Gen Z want to be, which is really interesting because that's never, of course, would never even be an option for previous generations, being able to make money from home on a device and being your own boss. So in terms of being a company and trying to create an employee value proposition that is as enticing as has enough like varied employee experience for someone young, it is a challenge. So I guess just on what I've said so far, I was wondering, does that resonate at all with you guys? Have you found that you've needed to kind of rethink the offering that you have for your younger talent in order to keep them engaged? Do you find that they're kind of demanding progression a lot quicker? I'm just wondering if you have anything that you guys have noticed so far on this topic.
I think they are probably not going for the, as you were saying, for the more traditional kind of jobs because of the culture that they are in. So, and maybe they want things a little bit faster than it is.
100%. That's something that I'm hearing a lot as well of like, and I think this is where maybe the entitled debate comes into this because I've spoken to people in HR who say our Gen Zs, they just come in and they expect to be promoted in like 2 months and they expect a pay rise really quickly and they just expect so much and they want to leave if they're not getting it, and they're quite the way that they communicate that they're not happy is quite like blunt and upfront, which I guess could be deemed entitled and a little bit triggering if you're not used to that. But then on the other side, like what I do see is a lot of very hungry, ambitious young people who really do want to make an impact and are willing to work really hard for a company that will invest in them and believe in them and give them opportunities where they're not just like put in one narrow, stay in your lane, kind of traditional career ladder. And this is why I've talked about the lattice career ladder. So allowing, kind of reshifting our view of the career ladder and enabling young people to move vertically, horizontally, diagonally outside of the organization and kind of helping them to kind of experiment with different skills, and especially with the rise of side hustles. And I know that a lot of us, the stats show that the main reason that we do the side hustles is to get more money, obviously. A lot of us are worried about cost of living, but it's also because we want to pursue a passion and we see our working life a little bit differently, perhaps, in the sense of wanting to pursue multiple interests and not be kind of put into a box and told to stay in that box. So there's lots of kind of creative things that companies can do in this sense. Another just couple of things is about having a speedy application process with, sorry, by the way, I'm trying to have a look at the chat as well as talk. So yes, I agree as well about the pros and cons of digital, Elaine. Yeah, so having a really speedy application process and also rethinking job adverts. I don't know if, does anyone know Stephen Bartlett?
Yeah.
Yeah, Diary of a CEO. So He started, and when he wants to hire someone, he puts a LinkedIn post out, and it's instead of your kind of traditional, like, these are the role requirements, this is what experience you need, this is what you'll get, a lovely company to work for, and lots of opportunity to express yourself. He puts out a really interesting post where he's like, I don't care what uni you've come from, I don't care, blah, 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 blah. Show me something. Show me something that would show me why I should hire you, and kind of giving people kind of creative freedom to apply in the way that they want to apply. And actually, I've seen a lot of people, young people, apply for jobs instead of the traditional CV. They create, like, especially if we're talking in marketing, advertising, creating TikTok videos of like a portfolio of like, if I was hired to be the social media manager of X company, this is what I would do on my first week. And making a TikTok video of it, rather than your just, yeah, your traditional CV and cover letter. Because as well, I think we need to question like how fit for purpose are they all the time? And how well do they make people want to apply for your company? It kind of course they serve a purpose, but trying to make things a little bit more fun and interesting, based on kind of our the context of our background. So I'm aware of time and I'm talking a lot more than I had anticipated. So I'm gonna have to go quite quickly through the next slides. So the next thing is the glow up. Is everyone aware of what a glow up is? No. So the glow up is usually is when you have like a visible improvement in what is often your appearance, but actually can be related to all aspects of your life, like your career, relationships, success, all sorts. And people say, oh, I've had a glow up. And it's kind of a thing on TikTok. I'm talking a lot about TikTok. Has everyone got TikTok? No.
Only to monitor my son's use.
I sound like such a Gen Z here. So it kind of brings to life this theme of younger people kind of obsessing about self-transformation. And I think part of this is because we have access to everyone's life online or what they want us to know anyway. And so everyone kind of puts out there like, oh, yes, I'm being super successful and everything's going perfectly. And there's so much kind of inherent pressure in that, that I think it kind of creates this culture of wanting to be better, do better, and also let everyone know that as well. So in some ways, that's great because what I've noticed is that we want to learn. And in fact, we're almost obsessed with learning. Like if you look on YouTube and TikTok, a lot of the videos that have the most views are kind of tutorials, or this is how you do this, or it's advice. And it's because we want to learn how to do things. And we're so used to, you know, you don't know how to do this, so you just Google it, or you find out, you figure it out. And the other thing is, as well, it's not just, it's like the whole package. And Mary, you were saying about this whole work-life balance. That's what I'm relating, speaking about here is it's not just like career success. It's like having it all, having the lovely life, the time with friends, the time with family, the autonomy, the freedom, the job that feels great and feels meaningful, but also the money. And it's not that I don't necessarily think that this is new. I'm not saying other generations don't want this, but I think we have more choices now and we are more informed and we're used to using our voice earlier on. So I think we're more likely to reject companies and roles that don't kind of give us this. So if we flip it onto like what can companies do, stuff that's worked really well is coaching and mentoring from day one, and really investing in their growth and like taking it seriously and being really clear, like from the start, what the career progression opportunities are, and also not overselling them, because as I'll move on to another point, transparency and honesty is also so important for my generation. And we'll call you up on it. We'll get the receipts. I don't know if anyone knows that phrase as well. But I think it's shifting from a mindset of, okay, so you need to learn a new skill. Here's a training program that you go on for a couple of days and that's it. It's more like, how can organizations provide a continuous learning and development growth culture for this employee's whole experience that never ends? And I think that's so attractive to younger people. And also when it takes into account overall well-being, not just, oh, you need to learn how to do this specific skill for your job. It's like, how can I have better self-leadership skills, personal effectiveness, regardless of what role I'm in, whether I'm a mechanic or, you know, I'm working in HR or whatever it is, we all need these skills. So the next thing is, it's giving freedom. So another thing I'm seeing is a lot of demand for autonomy and freedom in when, where, how the work is done. I've seen companies who've put in, especially with hybrid work, put in policies now of, you must come into the office like 3 or 4 days a week, and we're going to monitor when you tap in and you tap out, and that's going to impact your bonus. Doesn't seem to work, seems to send people the opposite way, because it's not that they don't want to come into the office, it's more the fact of being treated like a child, and kind of not feeling like you're being empowered to decide where is the best place for you to do your best work, and the trust in you to know that you will do the right thing. And if you need to come into the office, you will. If you need to have specific meetings with people or whatever it is. So rather than kind of acting like an authoritarian figure, I think it's important for organizations to accept this whole freedom, autonomy thing and the sort of work-life balance. But having said this, I have to admit that, unfortunately, as I said, with the pandemic, the education system has fallen short in teaching key self-leadership and personal effectiveness skills. And so there is a skills gap in the sense of, I know that there some employers are struggling with, they're giving more freedom to their young people, but then they're not delivering the work because they don't have the, they haven't fine-tuned these kind of personal effectiveness self-leadership skills. So I think it's important to couple the two things. So teach them the skills, give them a mentor, give them coaching, then also give them freedom. And we need to create cultures of psychological safety and trust, so young people actually feel empowered to do their best work. And it's kind of like, when you let them go a little bit, more comes back most of the time when you've done all of the skills beforehand. So the next thing is, hear me out. My voice matters too. So I've spoken about this a lot. As I said, I think we're just used to expressing our voice a lot earlier on. So as I mentioned, like Snapchat and TikTok stories go viral in minutes. So young people join companies and they just, I think we just really want to be heard and appreciated. And something I consistently hear with my peers is, I'm so frustrated. The people in my organization just don't listen to me because of my age. They just don't take me seriously. And again, don't think that's a new thing, but I think we've got less tolerance for it, I guess. And that's maybe perhaps where the entitlement might come through, of asking the question of like, why do you not take me seriously because of my age? Can we have like an open conversation about it? And yeah, out of interest, how often do you in your companies kind of get your younger employees to share their views on more typical senior leadership conversations or meetings? Are you inclusive? Do you ask, you know, what is it like to be a young person in this company? Or what's your view on this?
I can speak to my past experience, you know, in my last role, and I don't think it was happening at all, you know. And what kind of comes to mind actually is one of the phrases that I think Neil at Holos was saying, you know, around just Gen Z strategy. You know, if you're not doing this, if you're not getting your Gen Z strategy right and you're not engaging them, you're failing at business because of the degree to which Gen Z are now forming part of the workplace. So it's crucial. It is crucial. I think that's an important, you know, takeaway for me as well, for any organization I work with.
100%. And Elaine, agree. I'm 100% coming on to that point. That is the key, a mesh of young energy and wisdom from the oldens, is what she said.
I think it's great how much that from a corporate background 10 years ago, these words like culture and policy and embedding how important culture is would be like kryptonite to a lot of the old established corporate world. But that's not really progressive or helpful to attract new talent and keep new talent. So I think, yeah, owning that culture is the way to win over Gen Z people. So sounds really important and good.
100%. And actually that brings me on to this slide, which is all around like ownership and being real and being authentic. And it's like, I've got a few phrases there, which I will go through, but you know, greenwashing is a no-no, and actions speak louder than words. And it's like, I don't know, we all know these things, but I think the tolerance for it is getting less and less. Really, yeah. And yesterday we actually hosted a dinner on this topic, and I was talking to some head of talent at law firm, and some amazing stories of what she's done to really own their culture, and they take responsibility when they have, when someone has had a bad experience, and they own up to it and they do something about it. And everything is like, there's a whole culture of feeling seen and heard. And I think that is so important. So the context here, I think having access to social media and making our profiles, and you know, the whole thing around like identity and pronouns and individuality and all of that, I think on one side we are a lot more open and kind of taking people at face value and encouraging diversity and inclusion. And so I guess like there's just an expectation like that is a given at an organization. It's not like, oh, we're really good for D&I. It's like, no, yeah, of course. Good. It's like, what else? And I think here is really important is the point of authentic leadership and enabling people to be the best versions of themselves most of the time as possible. And also bringing more of a human element into work. I think, you know, bringing our whole self to work. I was having a conversation last night of the topic around mental health, right? So in the past, you would just, what I've heard is you would never dream of talking to your manager and saying, I'm having a bad mental health day, or I'm just really overwhelmed. You would just kind of get on with it as much as possible. And kind of toughen up. Whereas now I think we've started to create a culture where we are super open about mental health, and we say, yeah, we are human. Like, let's not pretend that we're all robots and no one has a mental health, because we all have a mental health. So I think sometimes there can be a bit of a clash of when some people in different generations are like, believe that it's inappropriate to talk about non-worky things. at work. And I think this can create a bit of a tension. And I think in terms of like engaging and retaining, I think it is really important for you as a young person to have the confidence to know that you can and have the psychological safety to speak up and be like, look, I'm really not feeling great today because of, I don't need to go into wild details, but to be able to then feel like I'm supported and I have the trust in place so that I can, you know, maybe I need to take a couple of hours off, but tomorrow I'm going to be so much more productive because I've done that, because we are human and we have stuff going on. And that second bullet point in the first column, having a mentee, I don't know if anyone knows that phrase, but it basically means having a mental breakdown. And that obviously that's not anything to be joking about, but the point is that the fact that we have even coined that phrase of I'm having a mentee just shows how the extent of how common it is to be open about your mental health and how you're feeling. So yeah, that's very aware of time. Gosh, this is, I hope it's gone as quickly for you guys as it has for me. The next one is making a difference hits different. And I'm sure you guys have all heard this point around the younger generation really wanting meaning, purpose, making a difference. Here, what I'm consistently hearing is, I don't want to be a cog in a machine. I want to be cared for. I want to feel like I'm making a difference. Even if I am the most junior person in the team, I want to know how my job is making a positive difference and how I matter into the bigger picture. And I was co-facilitating a leadership program at a company, and it was interesting because they, in the cohort, they actually had people from four different generations and different seniorities. And it was interesting because all of the younger people were like, in terms of the projects that they were doing and meetings, they were like, I want to know the why, I want to know the context so that I can like connect to it. And the older generations were like, well, it doesn't always matter what it is. And it was just an interesting kind of dynamic. Why do we care so much about the why behind what we do? So in terms of companies, what can employers do? Being able to infuse a sense of meaning and purpose into the role. Again, not doing it in a kind of greenwashing way of like, here, you can have a job here and you'll feel so fulfilled and there's so much meaning to it, but we're going to pay you £1 an hour kind of thing. Because I have seen that as well of like, oh, you won't get paid much, but there's loads of meaning and purpose. It's kind of that debate of and or it should be kind of and, you know, fair financial reward for and incentives, bonuses linked to these things as well, for doing the role, whilst also giving meaning and purpose and helping us to contribute our individual kind of talents and passions towards whatever the role is. I think we are, I read in a book actually about Gen Z, like there's this big misconception that Gen Z are just kind of boycotting all kind of companies. They don't want to work for anyone. They just want to quiet quit and do their own thing. But actually they said Gen Z are looking for something to believe in. It's just a matter of kind of communicating in an influential way and a way that resonates and is authentic. So to my kind of final point, which I mentioned earlier, is we need to co-create, right? This is not a whole conversation of it's us versus them. And of course it's important. I've kind of stereotyped this whole way, but it's important to not stereotype as much as possible. Like at the end of the day, we are all individuals, like not two Gen Zs aren't the same. So I think here, the point is, you know, now we've got a generation with, because of the aging population, we've got, talking more broadly here, we've got 4 to 5 generations at work, all co-creating together. Sometimes in teams, we have 5 generations. I know that seems wild, like that fifth generation, but there are still some. And there's a lot of biases and stereotypes that are kind of playing under the surface that are, you know, like what I spoke about earlier in terms of the headlines, about the entitledness, and context is everything, right? And that's why it's so important for us to just, one of the most important things is to ask the question. I was talking to someone last night and she was saying they had a new grad join the company and they were getting really frustrated because this, so it was a law firm, and this grad kept taking calls outside in like weird places, and it was like hard to see him, hard to hear him, and they were like, oh, does he not care, is he unprofessional, is he, you know, what's wrong with this guy, does he not know that you just don't do that? And then it took someone that it was just that he just doesn't care, that was the narrative, until someone actually cared to delve a bit deeper and build trust with this person so that they could open up, and they found out that actually he was living in a two-bed apartment with 4 or 5 other people, and they were all trying to work from home, and they were all taking calls at the same time. And he thought the most respectful thing to do, to be confidential, was to go outside to take calls, and he didn't want to obviously don't feel like he could speak up to kind of speak his truth, and like, I'm struggling in that respect. And so that's why, that's just one example of just why we need to open the conversation and talk about our stereotypes and talk about our biases and say, you know, that comes across to me as quite entitled. Can I explain to you why, based on, you know, my context and what I'm used to? And could you kind of explain to me from yours? It's like any team, from any background, you know, trying to understand people and trying to create a culture where we can just be honest, in a respectful, responsible way, to create those deeper relationships. At Holos, we have 3 types of conversations that we believe people need to have in order to build trust. One of them is social conversations, and that's obviously like, oh, what were you doing last weekend? And that builds trust because, you know, you find out more about people. There's also the operational side of things, which is about the task at hand and what needs to be done to get stuff done. But then there's also a relational piece, and that's more about, you know, what are you not sharing that you would benefit me knowing? Those more harder, deeper questions that get under the surface that actually really build trust. And I think investing in those conversations in a multi-generational approach or context is so important. And the other thing is, this is my final thing, is we need to reshift our whole idea about leadership. So there's this whole idea that leadership is like the senior people in an organization setting the strategy, and that kind of comes at a certain age, a certain role. And at Holos, we believe, we kind of shift that on its head. And we believe leadership is a skill, not a specific person. And actually, the art of co-creation, of creating competitive advantage from a culture perspective, is being able to shift between these 3 skills, which is, if you look at it like a triangle, you've got leadership, which is the skill of creating change. You've got management, which is the skill of keeping things reliable. And then often overlooked is followership. So the skill of seeing someone else doing something great and following them. We need to be able to teach even people in the lowest level of job, how to shift skillfully between these 3 skills. And actually that creates a real collaborative culture, and also really empowers and engages the younger generation as well. So this was just a little summary of all of the things that I've said. So keeping things exciting, enabling for me to speak up, self-growth and learning all the time, continuous learning, being real, transparent, authentic, injecting a bit of humanness to work, freedom, autonomy, making a difference. And then that really important final piece about co-creation. Thank you, everyone. It was so lovely to meet you, and thank you for your input on the chat and stuff. And yeah, I'm always here if you just want to chat about anything to do with this, because I think you can tell I'm quite passionate.
This has been a production of the IPBN in partnership with Pinkroom. For more information, visit us online at island-portugal.com and on LinkedIn at Island Portugal Business Network. For more IPBN podcasts, find us on Spotify or visit our website for the full list of episodes.